Hello, everybody. Welcome to How We Work. I am so excited about this episode. It is super special, and I am joined by two amazing guests that I have been so honored to work with. So let me introduce them to you. Julian Wright here is a behavioral science researcher and a colleague of mine at WorkHuman. She is a people data analyst, and she has worked with me on this research that we're going to be talking about today. And then also we've got Melissa Dawn Simpkins, who is the CEO and founder of Velvet Suite and the She Suite. Thank you both so much for joining. So I gave a little intro of both of you, like, you know, your technical stuff, what you do, but we always like to start out this episode with finding out about the humans who are joining us, right? Because we are WorkHuman after all. So I'll start with you. Julian, tell us a little bit about who you are as a human.
Yeah, so first of all, I'm so excited to be here. This has been a long time coming, I feel like. So for me, I am a people data analyst and consultant on the WorkHuman IQ team. I've been with WorkHuman for almost 2 years now. I started out as a part-time employee while finishing my doctorate in psychology at the University of Georgia, go Dogs, and then started a full-time role in September. But the human side of me, I am really just starting my career pretty early on, transitioning from more of an academic background into an industry role. I'm an immigrant from Canada, which is a big part of my identity. I am married, no kids, which obviously influences, you know, the work that I do and how I show up and am able to be flexible in the roles that I have. And I am a geek about WorkHuman. I love the work that we do. I love working with clients. I love digging into the data. And so I'm just really excited to talk about some of the research that we've done today.
You also recently ran a marathon.
I did.
I'm just totally going to celebrate you right now.
Thank
congratulations.
You. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yep.
All right. Melissa, your turn.
Oh, gosh. Well, I am so happy to be with both of you today. This is truly been an awesome partnership. So to tell you a little bit about who I am as a human, I am someone who's just always been very passionate about purpose and discovering my why. And that journey has led me to being a mom. I'm a wife. I'm also a grandmother. I have a beautiful blended family of all boys, four boys, in fact. Wow. And I am also someone who is really passionate about mission-centric work. And that's led me to the work that we do at Velvet Suite. And we go to market as the She Suite. And that has been the beautiful purpose of our why, coming together to really address what I believe is an opportunity to create real change in the world of work for women, but for everyone as well. And so I'm so excited to dive into that. My professional journey, just to give a little bit of perspective on that, is I have been an intrapreneur, I like to say, innovating in large organizations. I worked for four big corporations prior to starting my business. And I'm just passionate about creating change in the world of work. So let's dive into it.
I'm so excited. You know, I've learned so much working with you in the She Suite. You know, in my professional background as an industrial organizational psychologist, you know, we study a lot about the importance of meaningful work, but I never really thought about, you know, purpose as it relates to women and the nuances of what we deal with until I started working with you and the She Suite. And I actually mentioned that this morning. I did a podcast with Ginny Clark, and she brought up the word purpose again as it relates to women and their career. So can you just talk a little bit more about She Suite and how She Suite helps women find their purpose and operate in alignment with their purpose?
Yeah, you know, it's a fascinating topic because I think women in the world of work is not new. What has been consistent is that women have, since we've started moving into the industrial era of working and making a contribution to our economic impact in the household and beyond, we've always wanted to pursue and leverage our gifts and skills in a way that contributes to our home and also in life.
Yeah.
The challenge has been, as we continue this pursuit, for whatever reason, and I believe we have some indicators of what those reasons are, women consistently fall short as it looks at their pipeline over time.
Yes.
And so the issue that we're dealing with is really sustainability for working women. Like, how long can I sustain the pace, the pressure, yes, as my life evolves, because yes, most women are multi-hyphenated, right? Mm-hmm. We all have at least four jobs, mm-hmm, sitting here today. And that pressure and that desire to perform becomes sometimes incomparable in terms of how do we deal with that. So purpose, mm-hmm, becomes not just this idea of a navigating force of like, who I want to be, mm-hmm, but it helps us clarify the right choices.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that.
We need to clarify be clear about the right choices. And we have choice. Ooh, we, yes, have power, right? Mm-hmm. To,
absolutely,
make some choices.
I love that. So we've mentioned up until this point a little bit about our partnership. So let's talk about that for people who are listening. How did we come to partner? And then I'll hand over to you, Julian, to explain a little bit about how we partnered, mm-hmm, and how that research kind of rolled out in real life.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll talk a little bit about what attracted us to WorkHuman. When you think about women in the workplace, often you hear that they feel unrecognized, mm-hmm, and under-rewarded. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about the work that WorkHuman does around creating recognition, mm-hmm, and appreciation and value, mm-hmm, it just is a natural connection, I think, for, mm-hmm, the work that we're doing to support women to be seen, to be valued, mm-hmm, and to be empowered. So I thought that was a great, just initial, meaningful, purposeful connection.
Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of connection, that's something that we find in our client research. We find a lot that women, more so than men, actually tend to be connectors. We find that they tend to be more central to the organizational network compared to men. And when I reflect on how this started, it was through connection. So it was because, you know, I'm friends with Yuri, you're friends with Yuri, Yuri, yes, talked about you and the C-suite.
Yes.
Jen Reimert was friends with Yuri, yes, so she would check up on it. And somehow this connection happened through all that connection.
Absolutely. There is I like to call it the catalytic effect that women, mm-hmm, have. Like, you touch one, it's like the ripple. It, mm-hmm, just continues to go out. And the opportunity organizations have to leverage that, mm-hmm, influence is, I think, where you're going to see competitive advantage for companies that really get it and, mm-hmm, see the communal connecting points that can really change culture.
Absolutely. So, Julian, can you tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, how we approach this research and what did we do in terms of studying how women experience work?
Yeah, absolutely. So this initiative is actually a part of a larger WorkHuman IQ initiative to really understand the lived experiences of employees who might come from marginalized or underrepresented backgrounds to better understand how do their experiences at work differ, what challenges and barriers might they be facing, and how can we leverage this data and information to actually, you know, instill some actionable strategies, mm-hmm, that companies, individuals can take to improve their experience. So Misha Ann actually started all of this a couple of years ago now
at this point.
Mm-hmm. With a collaboration with an organization called Black Men in Tech.
But shout out to Jesse Harriet, because that his idea. I want to make sure people do not forget that. Go ahead.
Which was wonderful. So we kind of took a similar two-pronged approach to both of these, which was we started doing a series of qualitative interviews. So in the case of the C-suite, we went up in person and saw Melissa and did about a series of maybe 20 in-person interviews, mm-hmm, with members of the C-suite for about an hour, where we just asked them about their lives, their lived experience at work, what they were struggling with, experiences that were really positive for them that we could maybe take some insights and learn from those as well. So we did those qualitative interviews. We took those insights, distilled them, and used that information to develop a survey that we wanted to send to a global survey of women full-time employees just to dig a little bit deeper, because we understood that perhaps the experience of women who are connected to an organization like this, the C-suite, who have more of this community embedded, they, mm-hmm, see purpose-driven work and understand that to a different level, they might not necessarily generalize to larger populations. Mm-hmm. So we needed a broader sample to kind of get at some of those differences. So using the qualitative interviews and the survey respondents, we ended up with a good amount of data that we could dig into to figure out, okay, let's highlight what are some of the key trends and insights that we're seeing, mm-hmm, within the realm of women at work. Mm-hmm. What can we learn from it? And what do we need to be doing in terms of our jobs and the things that are in our control to make their lives better or easier.
Thank you, Juliet. Now let's talk about some of the things we've found. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that we found is that, you know, woman might be a broad title, but there's so much going on underneath that title. And so between us, we've said women are not a monolith. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit more about that, Julian?
Yeah, I think oftentimes, you know, even just me saying women at work, mm-hmm. you have a perception or a stereotype of what we mean when we say that. Mm-hmm. But even just going through our intros that we did at the beginning, you see how the human behind the individual employee at work really influences the opportunities that someone gets, the resources, mm-hmm. how they are perceived by their colleagues. And so what we mean by women are not a monolith, it means there's no one size fits all experience mm-hmm. for women. And that's what the data showed, right? We mm-hmm. saw in terms of demographic information, women from many different races, ethnic backgrounds, mm-hmm. different career stages, ages, parental status, caretaking status, mm-hmm. Industries, all those types of things. And that really changes how they show up, what they're able to do. And that needs to be taken into consideration rather than just kind of using a broad strokes approach of women at work. What does that look like? What do they need? Because they need different things.
You know, so now I'm going to have a little vulnerability moment. You know, when I came into this research and I thought about it in my head, I was really interested in the other identities people hold in addition to being a woman, mm-hmm. right? So things like neurodivergence. I've been thinking a lot, too, about the idea of being Asian and how there's just so much underneath that, right? Like if you are lighter skinned Chinese versus if you're darker skinned Indian or Bangladeshi, you know, you're all woman, but you're walking through the world in a different way. People who are, you know, differently abled or maybe trans women. And one of the things that, you know, I love everything that we found and I love this effort, but I'm still thinking through, you know, because transparently, we did not get enough people in some of these different categories to really get into what happens when a woman is Black and disabled. You know, we know from the research that they're underemployed. If they are employed, what are some of the barriers? So this is something that I really hope that we continue to look at and delve into and maybe get some creative ways of looking into these populations that are a little bit harder to capture and measure in a broad mm-hmm. survey like this.
You know, one of the things, just building on that, that we've looked at in the She Suite, so we've worked over, you know, about 30 countries, mm-hmm. women from around the world, and you think about what are the commonalities, what mm-hmm. are the differences, mm-hmm. and you think about how many identities we all have, yes. right? I'm from the South, so there's a Southern identity, mm-hmm. there's a faith identity, there's so many different elements of identity. And the one commonality that I think unites humanity is purpose, is why. And what we found with women in particular is a lot of times there is this duplicity of my identity in terms of what people perceive of me, and then what do I self-identify mm-hmm. with, and where do I see hidden barriers yeah. around how I perceive my value and yeah. what I can contribute. So this, you're right, it needs mm-hmm. to be dived into a lot more because there's so much rich insight here.
I also think that that ties perfectly into a lot of what we heard from the interviews that we did mm-hmm. was women talking about being their authentic selves mm-hmm. at work mm-hmm. and many women's feeling like they could not show their authentic self at work mm-hmm. because the perceptions of them were so vastly different from who they felt like they intrinsically were. And there was a little bit of a disconnect there. And I think that living into your purpose, and one of the things that I think you are doing so well, Melissa, with the She Suite, is really teaching women and coaching them around how can you bring your true authentic self into work to still live that purpose-driven work, but not to the extent where you're putting yourself at risk, right? Like mm-hmm. there are necessary boundaries that need to be in place in order for someone to do that. They need to be in a psychologically safe environment.
Right.
They need to have advocates and mentors for them within their organization. But I see a lot of the work that you're doing came up in those interviews, and to see the transition from, you know, before I was involved with the She Suite, I never would have disclosed this to my boss. Mm-hmm. But after learning, you know, the downstream consequences of it, I felt really comfortable. And then, you know, it opened up doors for me down the road. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a process, but it also has to mirror the culture.
Yes.
You find organizations on this, you know, for the last, I think, the Business Council redefined what a corporation was about 8 years ago. And they said it's no longer just for shareholders, it's for stakeholders. There's a bigger mm-hmm. why of a corporation. So if a company spends so much time and energy and effort to redefine purpose, but they haven't aligned that with their people, mm-hmm. there's a huge disconnect. So that psychological safety, being authentic, a lot of times organizations have a responsibility in this journey of why.
Absolutely.
To tie the knot between the company and the people.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that we like to do at Work Human is come in hot. With our research, we like to study things that people are not talking about yet that should be. And I really think that we hit on one of those. You're laughing because you know exactly where I'm going with this.
I'm letting you take this one, Mishan.
I can take this one. So the hot finding or hot topic finding from this study for me is something that we're calling, or that is called, it's not just we're calling it, but the Queen Bee Syndrome. And this is a phenomenon of women being competitive with other women instead of being collaborative. And I remember in the interviews, you know, people were saying that they think that people were doing this because they were hearing people, like other women, say, well, I had to go through this, mm-hmm. so why should you have it easy, right? And one of the surprising things to me was that every single person we interviewed, every single one, said they had either experienced a woman who gave them a harder time than a man, and that was just, they were just nasty, hostile, competitive. They experienced it, or they witnessed it. We talked about this at the C-Suite conference, and remember, the chat just lit up, right? It's something that people seem to really be able to identify with, but we're really not talking about it enough. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about it, ladies. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. You want to start?
You go for it.
You know, I think it's so refreshing to uncover mm-hmm. the things that people don't want to talk about, because that's the real kind of core of some of these issues that we're going to bridge in culture. Mm-hmm. And I've experienced it. I mean, honestly, I was probably more shocked than anyone that I was doing an initiative focused on women. I didn't start the business to focus on women.
Oh.
I wanted to reinvent leaders. Interesting. And really wanted to, you know, Gallup says that 10% of us are born leaders. The rest of us just need to fall in line as be followers. I'm like, I was not the one supposed to be a leader, right? Mm-hmm. By all intents and purposes. So I'm like, I want to expand the 10%. Mm-hmm. And when you look at who's been disproportionately impacted by mm-hmm. this in the workplace, has been women, because you look at leadership and we're not there. So I said, okay, let's dig deeper on the leadership piece. Mm. So, but even through that, I myself experienced so much of that. Mm-hmm. And, to me, I was like, I want to be a part of the change versus just being the part of the complaining crowd.
Yeah.
So getting to the root of why that is, why mm-hmm. do women feel the need to compete versus mm-hmm. collaborate?
Yes. I love that you've taken it there. So in our, you know, casual conversations, right, I've said this and I haven't said this publicly yet, and I will now transparently, you know, I had to check myself because I was exhibiting some queen bee behaviors. And one of the things that, you know, Jenny Clark talked about this morning in my podcast with her was the importance of self-awareness. And self-awareness saves, because thank God I was like, wait a minute, Misha Ann, this isn't right. Why are you in your head like nitpicking this woman? And it's because, you know, there's ego tied up mm-hmm. in being the most senior Black woman at an organization. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so you kind of feel like, cross your arms, push up your lip, like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
That because the society tells us that there are only so many spaces and that there are not many of them.
It's a scarcity mindset.
It is.
It is a scarcity mindset. And so, you know, I gain ego, right, from taking another person down and being the only, but it is... I'm so glad we're talking about it, because the more we talk about it, the more people can be on the lookout for those mm-hmm. behaviors in themselves, mm-hmm. ask themselves the right questions, and when they see it happening, right, kind of help coach people through that behavior, because that's another thing we heard in the interviews, you know, a disappointment in, hey, people are seeing this, but nobody's doing anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I was, as you were sharing this, I thought about an instance that I had even with women who felt the need to overly critique because the association of being another woman that they brought in carried weight. And so there was this insecurity of, you're going to reflect on me, so let me overly, you know, compensate for what I feel is a gap in you, because then it's really about me. And to your point, we have to really ask ourselves the why question at least five times to get to a real answer.
That's right.
That actually reminds me of a conversation that I had with a woman during the interviews, because it was almost the complete opposite of what you just described, where she brought other women into the organization and she didn't want to criticize them at all because she didn't want to exhibit maybe Queen Bee syndrome. But the consequence of that was that she wasn't actually teaching or coaching these women. She wasn't giving them the opportunities because they weren't learning and growing at the same pace as maybe the men that she was working with for fear of not hurting feelings or exhibiting some of this behavior. So there is really a sweet spot, but until people actually start talking about it and being vulnerable in it, it's hard to progress.
I think the challenge is that we conflate niceness with kindness. And sometimes it's more kind to be not nice and to be direct. And Jillian, you and I work together and you know that I am direct.
Yes, you are super direct.
But I also think that I'm kind, right? And I think it's important for people to establish a foundational relationship. And I think this is where recognition really helps. If somebody is always or often complimenting you, spending time on the relationship, then when you have something that's not quite as nice to say, there's a foundation of trust there that the person knows that you're not just being critical. You know, I'm saying this for your own good. I'm saying this because I really believe that it could help you to hear this.
It's the developing of people leaders, because people leaders have to learn and know how to coach and develop,
give feedback,
you know, position it in a way that's constructive, but doesn't tear people's down. You know, and I think that's part of what we've tried to do with She Suite as well, is not just focus on her and say, we've got to fix you, but we've got to look at the culture. We got to look at your managers and see, how do we use this as an opportunity to build more of this collaborative communication?
I love that, because so often we get told what's wrong with us. You know, we look at the data around performance feedback quite a bit. We do some research on that ourselves at WorkHuman, and we do find that women are more likely to get feedback about their personality. How easy is it to change your personality? That is foolishness, right? So yeah, we do need feedback in a way that doesn't tear down the core of us, and that focuses on behaviors. This is a perfect segue to talk about our next finding, which is about mentorship. And one of the things that surprised me in the interviews were how many women were saying that they had male mentors. And this was a real bright side finding for us, right? Where women were saying, these are the things that male mentors have done for me. You know, they've listened to understand. You know, they've put me in positions and given me access to projects and meetings where I could grow. They've spoken nicely about me when I wasn't in the room. They've given me honest feedback. So, you know, that was really, really encouraging for me to hear. Anything to add on that from either of you?
I think the positive of that is that it means that anyone can be a mentor.
That's right.
I think even having that information as a male leader should be really encouraging, because I think there was this belief that, oh, women are seeking only women mentors. But I think what's really compelling about this research is that anyone can be a mentor, that men especially do have, I think, a responsibility to help advocate for women if, you know, there's not enough female leadership at the top, right? That came up time and time again in the interviews, and I think we also saw it in the quantitative data as well.
We did.
Yeah, we've been really intentional about helping leaders build their board of advisors. And that includes those that are mentors, those mm-hmm. that are advisors and sponsors and support systems, and also seeing it within each other, because mm-hmm. a lot of times we don't realize that I may have an answer. I could be a peer mentor to yeah. you. I could be someone who could provide support for you in your journey. So it's about being open mm-hmm. to others having access yeah. to share their insights, and then also being willing. We call it give to get. So now mm-hmm. you've gotten this. Now what are you going to give back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So a couple other things I heard that were really interesting. You know, one of the things that came out of the interviews is that one of the best things a man can do is just let it be known that they were looking for a mentor. So that when a woman goes up to them for mentorship, it's not a cold thing, because they've already announced that they're willing and open to mentor people, right? Mm-hmm. So that was one thing. The other thing that really struck me was this idea of proximity. And nobody really called it that, but I heard a lot of women talking about, you know, building an honest and vulnerable relationship with their male mentors in a way that helped their male mentors understand and gain empathy for the things that they were dealing with as women, that helped the man become a better mentor and advocate and ally, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of times we talk about this idea of uncovering, mm-hmm. which is really like, how do I really, as a male mentor, and after the summit, I had several men inbox mm-hmm. me on LinkedIn mm-hmm. and say, I just want you to know I am an advocate. Like, what can I do to help? And
amazing.
A lot of times there's just this gap mm-hmm. in communication and expectation. And the more vulnerable and human we can be to uncover, hey, I want to help, I may not know how.
Yeah.
Hey, I need help, I don't know how. We can come to the middle, and you start to see these relationships blossom
yes.
that typically would not have come together, right? Mm-hmm. Because of this place and space of creating those connections.
Yeah, we saw that in Black Men in Tech research too. I remember, you know, in one of those interviews, you know, a young man was talking about, you know, his mentorship relationship with this older white man, and it was just such a beautiful thing. And, you know, the man got really vulnerable about what that person meant to him, and you could just see the sincerity and the soul come through. And I think it's important for people to realize you do not have to be one of to stand with. And you know what? You may think about you giving something in terms of mentorship, but you're also gaining something in terms of understanding a perspective and a lived experience that may not be your own mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that brings me to the last finding we have planned to discuss, which is a big one, right? So let's talk about burnout. One of the big things was how many of the interviewees talked about burnout, but then also in our survey sample, we saw almost all of the women in that sample say they were burned out at least some of the time. Mm-hmm. Now, in our general samples, when we ask about burnout, we typically only get around a third saying that they were burned out sometimes, you know, often or always. So let's talk a little bit about those findings, but also, Melissa, I really want you to talk about like how the Brand Leadership Institute helps people, you know, find their purpose in a way that helps them avoid burnout. So maybe Julian, you can go first talking a little bit about our findings, and, you know, Melissa, you can chime in.
Yeah, I mean, given the interviews that we had, I was not super shocked to see the high levels of burnout in the larger data collection effort mm-hmm. because a trend in all of those conversations were how many roles
That's
women
right.
were navigating, how many responsibilities both at work but also within the home that they were, you know, the primary responsibility, they were the primary person doing.
And let's dial in a little bit on that at work piece, because what we yep. heard was they were taking on, you know, roles
in
employee resource groups too, specifically
mm-hmm. yes.
taking on a bulk of that work. So, you know, it's kind of interesting, like the victims doing the solving of the problem. Anyway, please continue.
Well, but this also, I mean, just speaking to, you talked about our client work already.
Yes.
We see this in our client work as well, that women traditionally are, from an organizational standpoint, they're the ones responsible for the organizational citizenship behaviors, which mm-hmm. is What is all the extra stuff that is not in my job description? Who's going to plan the company picnic? Who's going to make sure that all of the interns have everything that they need? Who's going to do the organizing and planning? You see that trend both at work and in the home. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of the conversations. Women were saying, you know, I had to take a step back from my full-time role because I was just wearing too many hats and I mm-hmm. wasn't doing anything well. Mm-hmm. And I needed to prioritize the things that gave me a sense of purpose and value that I was being recognized for mm-hmm. instead of spreading myself too thin and not feeling like I was doing anything mm-hmm. effectively, because that also was taking a toll on their mental health, their sense of well-being. So the burnout numbers were staggering, mm-hmm. but I think it's a larger conversation about, you know, what are women holding and responsible for right now? Mm-hmm. And is there a way that we can take some things off of their plate or give them the opportunities and resources to do it a little bit easier?
Yeah.
Or where they're in a culture or an environment where they're really supported to do yeah. to the work that they want to. Because yeah. that was the other thing. They want to do all of this work.
Right. Right.
And that yeah. that was really fascinating too. It's yeah. like, well, no, I don't want to lose any of these things.
Yeah.
But there's got to be a way to just make it a little bit easier for me.
So something that we're finding in some of our other research is, you know, these nuances around doing things as part of your employee resource group mm-hmm. responsibilities or volunteering. And one of the surprising things we found is that people who are participants are more stressed than average, people who are not participants. But what they're also saying is that they're doing this work that is invisible, that nobody sees or thanks them for. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's a really tangible thing that organizations can do when people take on this work that they want to take on, that is discretionary, right? The very least you can do is say thank you for that. And that might help, you know, because we do find relationships consistently between being recognized and being less burned out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think too, you know, we've been on this journey for over a decade with the She Suite. And one of the things that I would say overall is a trend in the workplace is just there is just an overwhelming amount of things to do.
Yes.
And we've seen people leave the workplace and we've seen companies trying to consolidate roles, mm-hmm. bring people taking a staff of three and making one person do all three roles. Even at the executive level,
yes.
you know, I can't tell you the number of executive women that we work with that have like four titles in one title.
Wow.
Vice president, XYZ and XYZ and culture.
Right.
right. And so it's yep. like all of the things. And the reality is that's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And so for women, I think we are giving you back the power to say, I have to have clarity of what is priority,
mm-hmm.
where I bring my greatest strength, where I can contribute at my highest value. Does this align with the work that I do?
Mm-hmm.
And with the Brand Leadership Institute, purpose becomes a pillar to a strategy, a playbook mm-hmm. that includes radical prioritization around my time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have hyphen five jobs, right? So that is my, but I cannot be all places at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Radical candor.
Mm-hmm.
Boss, you say all five of these things matter, but which one would you have me prioritize?
Yeah.
If I can't do this, this will happen. Are you okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
We have to have these types of conversation because we are, it's costing us mentally. It's
yes.
costing us physically.
Oh,
the
yes.
number of, we've had, you know, one woman in our community that recently passed and,
mm-hmm.
you know, you see the stress mm-hmm. that this causes in relationships and our own well-being. And so the demand for quality talent and high performing people is just going up. Women, when you're great, everybody wants you to do more.
Yes.
And so we have to empower women with the tools and companies with the tools to start having that radical prioritization and clarity to help begin to really move what matters forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for not letting us forget that these consequences are real.
They're very real.
Because I also heard people talking about the detriments to their health,
yes.
you know, the death of coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a topic that has teeth. You know, there are real consequences to real people. So thank you for that. Ladies, this has been a fantastic discussion, as I knew it would be.
You're a fabulous host.
Thank you, I try. So as we're wrapping and closing, are there any final thoughts that you want to leave our listeners with?
I would just like to thank Melissa and all of the members of the She Suite who participated in those interviews. I know that was another thing to add on to the to-do list, but it was transformative. It really was to hear people's stories. And I think it was also really impactful for them to have a space where they could come and be honest and share their experiences. And we saw people at the end talking with one another. They were networking when we were there too, which was really incredible to just continue to build this level of trust and let people know that they're not alone. And I just really appreciate the work that you're doing with the She Suite. And I'm very grateful for the time that all of your members gave to us.
That is fantastic. And I echo, thank you so much.
Oh, well, I thank you both. I mean, you guys took this on as a project, and what WorkHuman is doing to really bring recognition to this type of work, because it's really about creating change. And I believe it's a movement. It's not going to take just one of us, but the conversations, the challenging of thought, thinking about new systems, new approaches is what this is all about. So my ask to the listeners would just take it forward. Do find something to take action on from this conversation that can create change. I mean, HR profession is primarily women.
Yes.
So it's a great opportunity to make an impact for yourself, but also for your organization.
Fantastic note to end on. Thank you. Thank you, Julian. Thank you, Melissa. This was an amazing conversation. Thank you.